Hello and welcome to Horrorsperia. My name is May.
And I'm Clinton. And we're back.
Yes. Well, you're back.
I'm back. That's true. You've been on the grinds.
No, but we are back. This is Horrorsperia.
We are back.
Yes. And we have an interesting episode today. I think I'm calling this one Queer Fears.
Ooh.
What do you think?
I think that is spicy, perfect like the meatball that you cooked for me.
Okay, great. I like this humble brag.
Yeah, listener May is an amazing chef, and I think I knew that, but I know it now for reals.
Yeah, I made a soup from scratch.
And I was blessed to have some leftovers, and it was awesome.
That makes me really happy. That sets us on a good note. But yeah, Queer Fears.
Queer Fears, yes.
This coincides with some special news.
Special, breaking, really exciting news. Why don't you tell us?
I'm going to be presenting three different screenings at Sun Cinema in D.C.
Sun Cinema in Washington, D.C., our own home turf here.
Yeah, which is out over in Mount Pleasant. That's Mount Pleasant, right?
You're talking to the wrong guy.
Okay, never mind.
I'm sort of a shut-in.
Sun Cinema exists. I will be presenting three different films during the month of October. I believe those dates are October 5th. October 19th and October 26th.
These are Wednesdays in October.
Yeah. Wednesdays in October. And to begin to set up the stage for these films and the themes that tie them together, we wanted to record this episode because I would say all three of these films have queer fears in them in some way, or expressed in interesting ways. And we're going to see what Clinton thought of them.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, you know, and I'm also going to be here to encourage the listeners to go out to Sun Cinema if you can. Go to these nights.
Because I'll be doing like a little bit of a, not too long, like a 5-minute introduction. Mm-hmm. Then there will be
a little razzle dazzle, little showtime.
Put some little like tidbits in your brain, get you thinking about the film before the film starts. And then we'll have like an after film discussion, you know, bring your questions, your thoughts,
Open your hate, your love. Well,
all of
you
it.
You can keep your hate, right?
Yes, but we are encouraging all modes of expression as long as they're respectful.
Yeah.
I think there's respectful hate. I try to hate respectfully if I have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I respectfully hate during a Q&A by not saying anything during
the Q&A. That's true. That's true. You could honor your hate with your silence.
You could text a friend too.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And Clinton and I have been in this position before.
Mm-hmm. You just make your jokes on the text message and no one's offended
around
you.
And eye contact. We're pretty good at eye contact.
Yeah.
We can look over at each other.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But yes, please do come. I think it's my first time doing anything like this. And David and his whole team over at Sun Cinema is just some of my favorite people I've ever met since moving out here. And I think it's going to be really awesome. And to get you all hype, or if you're just discovering this podcast because you saw the screenings or you're going to, and you want to know more about why I chose these films, why they're important within queer spectator communities and queer horror and just overall in the horror community, because although these are queer fears, you know, it's for the appreciation of everyone, you know, beginning to see different lenses into some really interesting films. And some of these films haven't been screened in DC ever,
or in the United States.
Right.
Wow.
So super excited.
So that's
Yes.
The hype train.
So, I guess we should maybe... Well, you know what I would like to talk about?
What's that?
I would like to know what are some movies you've seen lately that you enjoy.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, what's really fresh on the mind is my brother today went out, told me he went out to go see Pearl.
Oh, we
in I theaters.
Wanted, I want to see Pearl with Clinton, but he doesn't want to see it with me.
I don't want to see it because I already saw it. It's not the same approach, the first movie.
They keep saying it's like very Wizard of Oz, which makes me excited.
That's cool.
Yeah. 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 They filmed it in actual celluloid Technicolor, which is crazy.
Is that like Wizard of Oz? Is that what they did?
Yeah. But I mean, also, that's cool. It's like so expensive to shoot on film nowadays. That I was surprised A24 gave them that
A24.
Money. Anyway, no.
Yeah, I'm surprised they gave them money too because I didn't think X was the biggest.
They shot it at the same time.
I'm not surprised, but I'm still surprised that it's out in, you know, full promotion. No, whatever.
It's getting better reviews than X. It honestly looks better than X.
It's probably better than X.
We should see it.
I'm getting closer.
Okay, because I'll wait. I haven't seen it yet because I was like, maybe Clinton will see it with
me. I do need to use my AMC stubs.
Yeah, hello.
Because I'm trying to also cancel it. I feel like I'm not using it enough.
Yeah, but no, you go with me.
Okay.
So Pearl.
So I haven't seen it, but my brother said, I think he liked it. I think he enjoyed it. And I've seen some other stuff, but I'm going to need to think about it. Do you have anything that's on your mind?
I have something really on my mind that we saw together.
Oh.
We loved Barbarian.
Oh, yeah.
You're such a... I'm here like staring at him.
I'm like, she must have seen something really good.
I'm still talking about Barbarian.
Yeah,
so.
I love that you loved it so much. And I want to hear your...
I don't want to maybe talk about it too much.
Well, you
maybe
don't have to spoil.
But I don't know. Like, I think the best thing about Barbarian is that we both walked in just being like, what is this? And I don't think there was ever a point where I was about to pull out, you know?
Well, so what I would like to hear from you, you don't have to talk about this, but I would like some analysis on the complexities of it. Because it could be for maybe not to like speak down on the general audience, but it could just be a thriller, psycho killer murder movie.
It definitely is a thrill ride on its surface.
It's a thrill ride.
Yeah.
And a strangely structured one. But I would be curious. I would
Which
be interested.
Which is kind of its strength. I don't want to talk about it too much.
Okay, I won't make you talk about
it.
But
I do think, I know where you're getting at.
Yeah.
And I think what I really love about which is similar to what I really love about It Follows. And It Follows is one of my favorite movies of all time. And even something like Barbarian, I want to rewatch it like as soon as possible, but I'll probably wait for it to come on streaming unless I'm really bored one day. I never have time to be bored anymore. I'm jealous of people that get bored.
Yeah.
Anyway.
teenagers and smaller children too.
I know, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And me actually, but
stop. Barbarian, like It Follows, has this really complex historical and social excavation of the changing landscape of Detroit over time. And I was really surprised by just how eloquently it did that throughout its, you know, straight up thrill rides to these really complex and grotesque imagery, but also these clear parallels to the landscape and setting. And I just think it was really well crafted overall. I would need to see it twice. But also, other than like this narrative of Detroit, as I would say, there is also this really interesting Me Too kind of commentary woven throughout it that at many times I never know where it's going to go. But I think it worked like near perfectly. And I want everyone to watch it. Like, it's just so exciting.
Yeah.
Are we going to see Smile?
God, you know, so the first time you asked me that, I said no. Right. Because in the theaters, in the Dolby surround mega, like, you know, experience, that trailer is too much for me. Every time one of those people smile,
yeah,
it like shivers. But when I see it on the small screen, when I see it on, I like as an ad on my computer, it's LOL funny. It's just so stupid and not scary. So I have come turned around the other way on it, and now I'm not scared at all, and I will see Smile with you.
Okay, we will see Smile.
God, but wait, no, what if it's scary? I don't want to be messed up.
I don't think it's going to be good.
I like seeing people smile. I don't want to be... you know?
I think it's gonna be so goofy.
I don't want to think about that every time someone smiles at me.
I'm not excited, but I am a little bit excited.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what the October movie slate looks like.
Is Smile's got to be one of them?
I am
huh?
not looking forward to the new Mike Flanagan series. I'm just putting that,
Is that a where is that? What is that?
He does all of the Netflix horror October series. So he did like Hill House, Bly Manor. He did Midnight Mass last year, and I'm tired of it.
You don't like it anymore.
His next one is called The Midnight Club. And it's about chronically ill teenagers that have superpowers. No.
Yeah.
The Mike Flanagan supremacy must stop.
Okay. Stop it.
Is that all of the horror to talk
that
about?
That made me think of something else. But I can't think of it, so.
We also are not in support of Don't Worry, Darling on this podcast.
Oh, you know, I'm curious. You know what song is good?
What?
The song that's like, times they change and I don't want to hear about how times changed.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
You know what has really good
that song
music?
Is good.
Some of these films have really good
that's
music.
That's true.
So let's, okay.
And some of them have Harry Styles in them. Is that where we're going with this?
None of right these back, have right Harry Styles on them.
What's the
Thank
guy's
God.
Name?
What guy? I don't know
oh, wait,
any
from
guy.
The Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh, I think his name is, no, yeah. I guess,
is that Harry
I don't
Styles?
Know. There's also Chris Pine.
Okay, I'm not
we're
thinking
in support
of
Chris Pine here.
Wait a second. Chris Pine.
Chris Pine. Star
Which one
Trek?
Is, oh, that, yes, that Chris. Okay,
that
yes. That Chris is cool with
what
me
Chris
too.
Did you have pictures?
I was picturing the
oh God.
No, the other Chris. The
no,
Chris
like
Pratt.
Seven.
Chris Pratt.
Ew,
yeah.
Chris.
That's why I was hesitant. Yeah,
oh no.
To share.
We're not in support of Chris Pratt here.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
No, he's a weird Christian. Okay.
I mean, if
anyway.
We just subtract all the things I don't like about him and he's great.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is his entire existence.
That's true. That's why he gets by his
What films are we reviewing today as part of Queer Fears?
All right. And these movies are The Lost Boys.
From 1987.
Alucarda.
From 1977.
The Bloodettes.
From 2005.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
We are heading... go ahead.
If you come to Sun Cinema...
Yeah.
On a Wednesday in October...
Yeah.
You will probably see one of these movies.
Except October 12th.
Don't
Do not come,
come on
that
October
day.
12th.
The Killers are playing in D.C. that day. Why
what?
Don't you go see The Killers
O-M-G.
In D.C. that day? Yeah.
Wow.
Playing at the Anthem. So yes, we're doing The Lost Boys, directed by Joel Schumacher. Alucarda, directed by Juan López Moctezuma. I'm pretty sure it's
wow.
that right.
Wow, knocked it out.
And that is from Mexico.
Okay.
Though it is a U.S.-Mexico production, because although it's Mexican, it is in the English?
Americas?
No, it's in the English language.
Oh,
it was
in
shot
English.
In Mexico.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was shot in Mexico.
What? Okay, I'll have some questions there.
We have, okay... I'm not good with French, but I think the official title for this is Les Saignantes. But we know it as The Bloodettes. Yes. And it's from Cameroon, directed by Jean-Pierre Bicolo. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yes, these films only... these films in some way deal with the manifestation of queerness, whether, you know, that's through its authorship... through its storyline, but also through displays of homosociality dependent on different contexts. In some way, all of these films transgress conventions through their protagonists or their anti-heroes. And there are some really interesting things laying beneath the surface of all of them that, to me, in some way translate into fear specific to queerness. And I'm really excited. That's why I wanted to show these at Sun Cinema. I'm excited to look at them all together. What's really interesting too, and this was accidental, is that all of them relate to vampirism in some way. But that they're not all vampires. Actually, I think only one of them, I think we could classify as normal vampires or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that is sort of what's in common with all of these. We're looking at three different cultures, three different times. And yeah, and what I also like about all of these is that they're all really fun, I feel. Would you agree?
I would agree. And I will also, not to just keep plugging the event, but these are perfect movies to see in Sun Cinema or any local theater, indie theater you've got. This is a great, these are great movies visually, auditorily. And they're I don't know about Lost Boys, but the other ones are like 90 minutes.
Lost Boys is short. It's 90 minutes.
So they're all fun. And they're, you can like you said, there's things under the surface here. And but you could also just enjoy it as a
why I really like the selection too, is that I think just watching them, you can get a lot of superficial reactions, but all of these films were made in very interesting historical, social, and cultural times, and they have a lot going on in them as well. So I'm really excited that these are the three films that kind of came to really be our first Horrorspiria, you know, like, real life event. Like, that's crazy.
Yes.
We started this. No, we started this in 2019. I was about to say started during
2019.
Yeah.
Okay.
We started February 2019. We've been doing this for 3.5 years.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Do you, okay.
Yeah. What?
What, you know, I love asking this to you. Now, you've seen at least one of these movies before, perhaps even more than I have. But how would you describe your experience of this journey? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, of
watching the films.
Of watching these films?
Yeah.
Yeah. These are all films that are enjoyable on some level. It's just like, as soon as it comes on, there's something in there that is pulling you forward. Yeah. You know, whereas some movies you're like, oh, I don't know. I'm not quite there, you know? And then, yeah, no, these are great.
Oh, that's awesome. Because this was your first time seeing most of them,
right?
All
of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Not your first time seeing The Lost Boys.
I've seen the movie poster, but I don't think I've ever seen Lost Boys.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm so glad. All right. A few things I want to know, maybe not right now or whenever you want to unveil. I want to know your favorite one, and I want to know why.
Huh.
Or the one that you felt was the most fun.
Okay, most fun.
You can answer either one however you want.
Okay.
Okay, should we just get into it?
Yeah, we're there. Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, grab our hands, grab a shovel. Let's dig in.
Oh, no.
That's our new segment transition.
Okay.
Digging in like a grave. Dig a grave because we're spooky, but we're going
to
go.
So to move on, we're going to introduce The Lost Boys, directed by Joel Schumacher.
Hey, wait a second.
Wait.
Horror Spirit fans are really diehard Horror Spirit heads or want to know.
Oh.
Don't we usually start with the earliest film based on the date of release?
Yes, but we are starting with what is going to be screened in order next month. That way, if you want to kind of listen slowly, like listen as you go, you know,
after
the screening, you just discovered us, you're like, I enjoyed that event with May. Let's see what the podcast is about. Well, here's the extended version of everything I probably won't get into in person. So yes, we're starting with The Lost Boys, directed by Joel Schumacher from 1987, which is going to be screening on Wednesday, October 5th, starting around 7 p.m. Yes.
All right.
You'll never grow old, Michael, and you'll never die.
Be one of us.
Notice anything unusual about Santa Carla yet?
It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire.
Dad. You know where Hudson's Bluff is?
I can't beat your bike.
You just have to try and keep up.
How far are you willing to go, Michael?
Guess first. How are those maggots?
Drink some of this, Michael.
Don't. Michael, it's blood.
Michael.
Now you know what we are. Now you know what you are.
Help me!
Stay back! Help me!
My own brother, a vampire.
You wait till Mom finds out, buddy.
You don't want to miss this.
Smell like garlic.
Okay, so that was some of Lost Boys, or The Lost Boys, from Joel Schumacher. This is the only U.S. film set in Santa Clara, California, which is supposedly fictional, but I swear I'm sure that there's somewhere in California called Santa Clara. So it can be confusing. Santa Cruz is the backdrop of Santa Clara.
Yeah, very exciting for anyone who has been to the Santa Cruz boardwalk.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that opening scene to me. I mean, this whole film in many ways is stunning, but I really love that like opening scene with the carnival and so cool.
When a movie opens with a carnival too,
you just know it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So The Lost Boys, do you want to tell the people what The Lost Boys is kind of about?
So I got to come clean here.
What?
I thought that we were going to do just like a promo episode where we're just going to hype these movies up. So I watched Lost Boys. We watched it together.
We watched it a while ago.
But
yeah.
We didn't watch the whole thing.
No, we watched the whole thing.
Did we?
If you didn't, well, okay,
yeah.
Listener.
I had to leave. I think I had to leave to go drive home.
No, you left in the middle of Labyrinth. But we
did finish all of Lost Boys.
Yeah, we finished all of Lost Boys.
Well, I couldn't tell what was going on because everyone was talking.
No, yeah. I think Gabby was the only one. Because also at one point, Clinton goes, this movie isn't gay.
This movie's
not about AIDS or something like that.
Oh, no, come on. No, what happened was...
What was it?
From like opening bell, it felt like every 90 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember the exact verbiage if you said, this is so gay, or this is so queer, or this is so... But you said it again and again and again. So yeah. Finally, I had to say, May... No one is kissing each other on the lips here. Like there is,
explicit queerness does happen in that. That is true.
Yes.
So it can be confusing because how is The Lost Boys gay?
Well, I totally get that it is, but to today's standards too, it's interesting, I think, to compare it to today. Because today you'd have the open relationship if there was a gay relationship.
Maybe.
You'd have, yeah,
we
maybe
don't really
not.
Have boy vampires still.
Yeah, but we have stories about gay men relationships and intimacy and things like that.
No, we do. Whereas, we do. You know, yeah. It would be really interesting. Well, I was about to say it'd be interesting to see how the Lost Boys would be remade, but I don't think I want to.
I do.
Will that. And I don't
sure,
know.
Sure, let's no, have fun, you know?
I'm not too
yeah,
sure.
Harry Styles, what are you doing?
No, definitely not. Oh my God. Yeah. By the way, this is the... I'm rather ambivalent on Kiefer Sutherland. I don't hate him, but I don't really love him. But oh my God, Kiefer Sutherland in this. I know that we're really late to the party, but he is the like quintessential beautiful vampire boy in this, I feel.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah, you were freaking out when you saw him.
I think you get it too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's charming.
Yeah, charming as hell. So The Lost Boys, though. So The Lost Boys is about, you know, there is this family, a single mother and her two boys. One of the boys is Michael. The other boy is Sam, I think. And they are moving to Santa Clara. And the boys all notice that, like, oh, there's, like, it's called the murder capital of the world. What's going on here? And as... they get settled into the town, especially going to, you know, the comic book store at the boardwalk.
And where they run into Corey Haim.
Corey Haim, that's who that is. And, you know, those boys are vampire killers.
Right. So there's some kids that are vampire killers.
Yeah. And they're like,
sort of created a club to defend themselves.
But the real club or the real clan or the vampire clan led by Kiefer Sutherland
or badass, so we badass.
But, you know, Michael, he's a handsome fella.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no yeah. one's denying that.
No. So, so Michael comes on in and Kiefer has a really pretty friend who's called Star. And Michael's like, I want to bang, baby. And
Star,
so
for Star, gender Star is Star female, male.
Yeah, she's a woman.
Okay.
Yeah, she was the woman. She's like the only woman other than Diane Weiss.
See, it's not gay. Well, come on.
Well, maybe.
Can I need to pause you too.
Okay.
I think you may have missed the detail of the shirtless saxophone player, the very muscular saxophone player.
That was beautiful.
Very sweaty,
yes.
Very muscled.
And this was just random, honestly.
That was. I actually wanted more of that, because that was like over the like woo, here we go,
the soundtrack. So every single time that there's like this really beautiful vampire-y scene, there's like this incredible song that plays too, that's like like that's definitely not the melody, but it feels like that in my soul when I hear it. I'm like, oh yeah, I can fly.
Yeah, lifts you up.
Lifts you. I love that. The musical motifs in this are really beautiful. This movie is the quintessential of camp. Even if nothing explicitly gay happens in it, everything feels like it's out of the out of a musical. Mm-hmm. Like just even Kiefer Sutherland, you're like, yes.
Yeah.
This man is a fruit, a beautiful watermelon.
Oh my gosh.
Well, okay, so Michael and Star make eyes.
Okay.
But Star is hanging out with Kiefer. But it's not like their boyfriend, girlfriend hanging out.
It's a little hard
out.
To tell what that relationship is. Yeah. Which is fun for the viewers.
It's especially, I mean, that's the thing. The Lost Boys, which we assume might be the vampire clan, though, you know, in the context of Reagan America, you know, the height of the nuclear family and conservatism and Jerry Falwell and the morality of the right. Maybe these boys with the single mom, even though
are lost in their own ways.
Yes. Yeah. Even though, you know, one thing that Joel Schumacher, who is a gay man, openly out during
the
this time,
the director
of the film, you know, he never portrays that family unit as incomplete or weak, even though we do get this romantic storyline going on later on with Diane Wiest and this, I think it's Diane Wiest, right?
I have no idea.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it's Diane Wiest. She gets to know this like older man that's hanging around town. His name is Max. And he seems to perhaps be like a potential father figure that might be missing, but more on Max later, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, Michael Starr, we have David, who is Kiefer Sutherland's character, and he's always flanked by these other dudes that are also presumably, you know, they're definitely coded as outcasts. We may not know exactly if they're vampires yet.
Okay. Is that, are you a little bit goth too, maybe?
Yeah, very, I mean, very punky, very.
Punky.
Yes. Joel Schumacher himself said that these vampires are supposed to embody the fear of the other, those who are outside of the mainstream. So that is very much how this gang of boys is styled as. So they invite Michael to do a little bit of a bike race. And that is when things get, you know, like very kind of homoerotic-y.
Right.
You know, a lot of longing side glances. We don't get a lot of shots of Star in this, even though she's right behind Kiefer.
Good night, Star. Oh, good. The clouds are in the sky. No one sees you anymore.
Until it culminates where the men take Michael to this like little cave-ish.
Is there like a flying scene? Or are they about falling?
To get there.
Or we're getting there.
Okay. First, yeah. Because
I know where you're going.
Right now, Michael isn't, you know, Michael's just vibing.
Maybe he's a little bit hungry, though.
He is a little bit hungry. And so what does Kiefer do?
He doesn't make him give him leftover Italian meatball wedding soup.
No, he orders some Chinese, but Michael digs in, we do hear something quite sonically similar to something that has been hurled at gay men before, right? Oh. We get shouts of maggots. Maggots, you're eating maggots. How dare you? Maggots. And of course, Michael starts vomiting up, whatever. Okay. You can't believe he's eating maggots.
Is he really eating maggots, or was this a vampire trick? We don't know as the viewers.
But Kiefer said, well, you need something to drink, right?
Yeah, please help me wash these maggots out of my mouth.
So what does Kiefer give him?
If I remember correctly, and I don't know because there's a lot of people talking in the room. Blood.
And it's like in this really cool, I would love his little drinking flask.
Like a blood.
It's really great.
Blood jug.
Little blood jug. And as soon as Michael drinks the blood jug, which Star says, no, you don't have to. No,
yeah.
David, stop it.
Star.
Oh, he doesn't have to.
Why are we seeing you disappear?
Star, gay shit is happening, okay? Gay shit's happening.
Yeah.
But he drinks it and mm-hmm. he seems to like it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, you know, we get some cool boy, you know,
boy on
drinking,
boy
on boy drinking,
good
happy good times. And I think there's nothing better to have some boy on boy action than going to a bridge, right?
Oh, totally.
Going to a bridge.
Totally.
And
hey, if your friends jump off the bridge, would you jump off of it?
Yeah, and you would hang off of the rafters. And then if your friends drop from the rafters...
Would you drop from the rafters?
You would resist.
I would resist, but I wouldn't have drinking the blood.
You would have drinking the blood.
No way.
You definitely would have drinking the blood.
You get me with the maggot trick? I'm out of there. I'm
no,
not drinking
fuck?
Anything.
What would you...
So I personally would not, but our character...
Well, Michael's scared shitless. He knows he's going to die if he drops from the rafter.
But don't drop. No, drop, Michael, drop. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha.
That's how Kiefer sounds like. And so when Michael drops, what happens?
He doesn't fall.
He does fall, kind of.
He falls a little bit, and then
he wakes up in his bed. Yeah,
oh,
he floats.
He does,
yeah.
I thought it was
he
like
does
a floating,
like,
a floaty,
like
a
yeah,
romantic.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, that's
how
where
I
you
remembered
get the
it. Yeah.
Song comes back.
Yeah.
No, 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 no.
And
nah.
Then he wakes up.
Yeah, he wakes
yeah,
up.
Yeah, ooh.
So
sort of like, you
what
know.
Actually happened?
Wow.
But okay, I'm not sure if we're going to go through the whole film like
that.
That
gives you a good taste.
But that tells you kind
of. See that in person in Sun Cinema.
Right. Yeah. And so the really interesting thing is, you know, this film, Michael technically never gets bitten. And this, he becomes half a vampire through ingesting David's blood. There are some twists and turns along the way. You know, is Max really who he thinks he is? What is the relationship between this vampire clan and the rest of Santa Clara, the murder capital of the world? Is Michael going to choose his clan of blood or his blood clan? We don't really know, but there are very queer fears, quite literally, expressed in this. 1987 was a time of what amongst
the AIDS and HIV epidemic, right?
Yeah. And so Joel Schumacher, obviously, as, you know, an openly gay man working in,
Hollywood
at this time, definitely, you know, well, first off, there is no direct male on male sensuality. Like, we never see the biting of a neck between men. And this, for the most part, still in many ways remains taboo to this day, largely because of the AIDS crisis and AIDS stigma today. But what I really like is that he may have known that perhaps the bite of the neck might have been a little too far, but the sharing of the blood,
that's pretty far. That might be even further, to be honest
with
you.
In many ways, I feel so too, right? Yeah, it's like an ingestion. And if anything, it kind of also blurs the line of consent, in the sense that typically the vampire bite is always non-consensual. But when Michael takes the chalice from David, you know, David allows.
I'm not sure that was consensual, though.
Well, David allows Star to try to convince him out of it, but Michael is like, no, I want to do this.
Okay.
So, you know, there is more of, like, of course.
And he does. So the audience kind of gets the idea
it's still really intimate.
On board with it. If it is.
And this entire film really expresses many different non-normative familial units, you know, whether it's the vampire clan, which, speaking of, you know, Star and David never really seem to have a romantic connotation to them. And then the rest of the boys express no interest in women either. They all really, you know, stick amongst each other to, like, a way that could only really be read at best as asexual, you know, at campiest, clearly homosexual, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are many little stitches in this film that overall just makes it a queer film. You know, when we talk about queer overall, we're not only talking about homosexuality and things like that, but we're actually talking about, like, non-normative values being expressed through different codes. So, you know, The Lost Boys may not be chock full of male-on-male kissing or lesbians or whatnot, but at its very base, it advocates and challenges a lot of nuclear family ideals and is imbued with a sense of camp that is directly tied to Joel Schumacher's queerness overall. You know? So, what are some of your thoughts on The Lost Boys?
Yeah, it was extremely different than I thought.
What did you think it was going to be?
I actually remember the movie poster of it. And so just seeing that and hearing the title, I thought it was going to be about a ragtag group. And if they're vampires, like, they're vampires. But this was not a predictable movie. This didn't follow the predictable path of, like, the story of a vampire gang, or maybe one guy wants to get out of the gang or whatever.
It's like a parody of the genre too.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of pop culture references, You know, like, I remember at one point during the fight, it's like, we're the blood-sucking Brady Bunch. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, that's a good line. That's good.
There was another Texas, there was a Texas Chainsaw Massacre drop, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Which, again, camp, right?
Yeah.
At its very base. And, you know, Joel saying that the film is about the fear of the other, you know, already just in that other is queerness in her ear and queerness in and of itself. So, I think you can see that imbued in all of the different, in its aesthetics and its, you know, narrative and the way that it embraces absurdism a lot of the times. I love when everyone gets transformed. Oh my God. That makeup is still so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's so fun. Yeah.
See that makeup live. Yes. In person.
October 5th.
I was going to just also throw in that as a straight person myself, right, I can recognize that this movie and that the time it came out may have really made a big impact on some people.
Yeah, it did.
And it could really feel like coming home or
coming home. Yeah,
you know,
because the vampires are never really, you know, cast off. Max is killed. Spoiler alert: Max is the head vampire.
Whoa, 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 whoa!
Oh no!
And I didn't even know that. And I saw the movie.
And he does get a pretty cool death scene. He gets like exploded.
Are you talking about Keith or Sutherland?
No, Max is the older guy that was the actual real head vampire.
What? Whoa! Spoilers! Oh, you have to bleep that. That's too much.
Oh God!
The guy that the mom was trying to get with.
He was, because he was looking, and that's why he was getting with the mom, because he was looking primordial maternal figure. And Joel Schumacher said, "Fuck you, patriarchy. She's fine on her own."
Yes.
And hell yeah, Kiefer Sutherland forever. He's too beautiful.
Hell yeah, he doesn't explode in a
if
fiery.
That's not the gayest
sequence.
Ending. You know, Kiefer Sutherland lives and the single mom lives. I don't know what else is.
That's.
And, you know, David gets his heterosexual love. You know, Joel Schumacher gave the straight something with Star and Michael.
Thank you. No.
Yeah.
They gave us like a distraction. So we're like,
yeah,
this movie's not gay. Yeah.
Exactly.
I love Lost Boys.
All right. I mean, a lot of straight people kind of do. Anyway.
I think it. Yeah.
I mean, it's a classic.
It's worthy of its place.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. So, The Lost Boys, Wednesday, October 5th.
The Lost Boys.
Okay. Are we ready for a Lucarda?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Todavía no puedo creerlo. Sin embargo, esa destrucción en la capilla fue hecha por alguien que odia cualquier manifestación religiosa. Para ese ser. La capilla fue un terrible antagonista. Cuando yo estudié en la Universidad de París, me fue probado una y otra vez que la posesión diabólica era mera tontería, o el resultado de los desvaríos de una mente insana. Enseñaron que la religión era una farsa y una forma de esclavitud, y que había llegado la hora de romper las cadenas de la superstición, el yugo de la mentira y la falsedad. Soy un hombre de ciencia, y ahora me encuentro frente a algo sobrenatural, que en verdad me atemoriza. Esta mujer estaba muerta.
¡Satan!
Pero había un hálito de maldad dentro de ella, listo para revivir y atacar a seres inocentes. Eso solo podría ser la obra de lo que ustedes llaman el demonio.
Alucarda.
God the Father commands thee. God the Son commands thee. God the Holy Ghost commands thee.
No!
Con Claudio Brook.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
David Silva. Tina Romero. Susana Camini. Adriana Roer. Tina French. Por Juan López Moctezuma.
So that was Alucarda, directed by Juan López Moctezuma, and from 1977, and it's a U.S.-Mexico production. Shot in Mexico, shot with Mexican actors, but all in English, so they all
are they... I was wondering about this, because it sounds like it's dubbed. Do you think they dubbed over...
Well, a lot of the films in this time, even if they were acting in the language, were dubbed
they would
because
dub
of
it
sound issues.
Just so for more.
For sure, I definitely... Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It had that kind of feel to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's the 70s, you know.
Yeah.
Right. So, Alucarda. What is Alucarda about?
Oh, no. Oh, I just saw this one last night.
Oh, my God.
I will tell you that if you try to watch this at home...
Oh, God.
Like you have a smart TV or something, you have to download an app called the Fossum. Fossum,
what?
Like awesome and F in front of it for some reason.
I swear I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay,
crazy.
So if you try to watch this on your own,
I
you have to download...
Hoopla.
See, my TV made me download Fossum.
I saw it with the library card. Prince William County, thank you.
Hoopla. Okay.
Hoopla.
So... There were so many ads in the version I watched.
Really?
It was every 10 minutes, there was like 8 ads.
Oh, no. I did not have that experience.
It was extremely difficult
to
stay focused. So
you
I'm not sure what the plot was.
Oh, my God.
But I do know. Okay. Well, here's what I will tell you.
I'm
going to try my best.
Happen.
A few things happen. There is a kind of a covenant.
Yeah.
Of women, and they all are...
Of women, of nuns.
Of nuns, well, and they're all... Their nun outfit
looks incredible.
Looks like tampons.
They definitely are dressed like tampons.
Like
yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
And it was a little unsettling. I was eating something while I was watching this.
Blood-soaked tampons,
and when,
to be specific.
Right. So, right. Because, yeah, clean tampons.
No.
No problem.
No.
No problem.
And the blood
That's
is heaviest
fresh.
Around their crotch. But yeah. It is blood
so,
all over.
But they're
all
like,
over.
All, it's all over.
Yeah,
so,
it is all over.
When that dawned on me, yeah. I was a little... I got a little upset in my tummy. And then every time I saw them, I got a little bit upset about that. But so there's this covenant of women, and there's this one woman, and there's this other woman, and there's just yeah. the one woman, Alucarda.
Well, she's not a woman. She's a 15-year-old girl.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. Did they say that in the movie?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
They're
sorry.
Teenagers. They
no.
The nuns aren't teenagers.
I saw them
but
naked in the film.
Yeah, they are teenagers. What do you want me to tell you? It's
oh,
Mexico
boy.
In the 70s.
No wonder I had to download Fossum. Oh, my God. Could put me in handcuffs here. Jeez Louise.
The All actresses right. were probably legal, they,
okay,
I hope.
Okay, so that's where I'm going to go with this. So
okay,
the two
but they're teenagers
ladies,
in the,
the
movie.
Two legally adulted ladies playing younger ladies, apparently.
I don't know about that. Go ahead.
Okay, so Alucarda, she's like the brunette.
Yeah.
Or the dark-haired one, right?
Dracula backwards.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Is that true?
Oh my God, Clinton only just realized.
Oh my
this.
God.
You just thought,
why does this
Alucarda,
keep happening?
What a weird name.
I thought it was Italian.
Oh my God.
I thought this whole thing was Italian.
No.
So the woman with the dark hair is obviously the like evil
Alucarda.
One.
Alucarda, yes. You know? She's evil.
So she's like cool and evil, and we all love her. Everyone is like the women are beautiful. And the Alucarda like pretty quickly falls in love with our like pluckier protagonist, lighter haired woman, girl.
Justine.
And Justine sort of is in love with her too or something, or sort of is along for the ride-ish.
Justine's like, I'm in a phase.
Yeah, Justine's, you know, yeah.
So already lesbians.
this is way more explicit and
oh, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So crazy shit happens.
Yeah.
Come to Sun Cinema and see it. Oh, it's awesome. And this one really, I'll spoil it. This is my favorite. Well, I enjoyed watching all of them. And I don't know if I can say it's my favorite, but I loved right off the bat. This has that 70s vibe.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's dressed really cool.
The music, the settings.
The aesthetic.
Stupid costume. Like, the stupid, like,
acting.
Gnomy trolley
guy. They keep doing... So, okay. So, this is, a convent of nuns, but they're fucking crazy nuns because they have all this sexual repression, but what they do then is have sex rituals to punish themselves for this repression, and they're led by this Father Lazaro guy that does like sadomasochistic sexual rituals on them too. So like, definitely everyone is very Catholic in this, but they fuck.
And he's like, preaches behind like 70 million Jesus's crossed on the cross.
Oh yeah, a lot of Jesus and titties in this movie. Like,
hey, that
Jesus
sounds
titties,
like
blood.
The church I always wanted to go to but never went to.
Right. But you know, yes, Alucard is crazy.
Alucard
may be more crazy than necessarily, I was going to say intellectual, but yeah, that also sounds kind of shitty because, you know, whatever.
Right.
But there are some very interesting parallels in this film. You know, obviously we have the religion parallel and the sickness and this madness that's being spread at the convent. But we also...
Which is what? The sexuality people
wanting
to have sex?
The sexuality people, but also Alucarda, who supposedly...
Is
Alucarda...
Yeah.
Of
is she
devil.
Like making everyone gay or something? Is it...
Well,
is that a part of it?
Is it the queer fear? Well, I think, you know, Alucarda is kind of like the satanic figure in this, right? She's like the head of all evil, but she's definitely like, she doesn't worship God in the other way that, you know, she doesn't worship
she's
God
in
at
it.
All.
She really loves Justine, right?
No, yeah, she really loves Justine. Well, it seems that she just really, because there's that implied relationship later on, or, you know, the once Justine dies, you know, there's this fear that now Alucard is going to go after the doctor's daughter, right? Mm-hmm. His blind daughter.
Such a funny setup. And the blind daughter, the scene where she like feels her face and she's like, you're very pretty. I was like, yep.
Gay. Yeah, Alucard is like the receptacle of evil and sex and gay. And you kind of love it just for that because she's not about God. You know, these nuns are literally whipping themselves and screwing each other and screaming, but all for Jesus. And Alucard is like, nope, but I'm here for the pussy. So, but actually one character. So what I was going to say is that obviously you have this religion, like, thread throughout Alucarda, but you then also have the science figure, right? I think his name is Doctor. Well, we can just call him the Doctor.
Doctor. He's essentially like Spock from Star Trek. He comes in. He's like, "This isn't logical.
This isn't logical. This is,
but it happens. So it's real. You know, science is nothing now."
Yeah. Eventually, after he goes through so many unreasonable scenarios, especially having direct confrontations with Alucarda and seeing her power over Justine, which when Clinton alludes to, like, we think Justine's into it, like, honestly, Justine resists a lot because Alucarda, even though she loves her, she's also a bit of a sadist, you know, but also she gets controlled by Father Lazaro in some instances, right? Like, there's
as one does
just a lot going on here. But my point is, like, it's not even like science over religion, right? Mm-hmm. We lose science throughout this as well, where Alucarda kind of becomes like a collision of all of these different ideas of tradition and religion, but also modernity. And really, it's sort of like the world in crisis is just exactly what Alucarda is. It's like it sets off everything in a big blaze of fire by the end, literally. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It's such like a nihilist film, but just so badass in so many ways. So yeah, the queer fear in here is definitely a lot more literal.
Yeah.
But it's also just like overall a very nihilist film. Like, does anyone win in the end, you know?
Yeah. So what does it say about this that it is a Mexican-American production? Like, is there the director being from Mexico? Is he bringing Catholicism and 70s sexual awakening together?
Well, the really interesting thing, well, first off, Mexico and Hollywood has always had a very incestuous relationship because LA is definitely not far from the border. And, you know, as the cinematograph, and pretty sure it was a cinematograph, when the cinematograph arrived in Mexico, it arrived in Mexico around the same time as the Vitascope, Thomas Edison companies, and, you know, the film studios in Southern California began forming. And there, you know, like very naturally, we've always had a lot of migration between Mexico and especially California throughout the years. That was very much still imbued in the creative industry and in the film industry. And, you know, the golden age of Mexican cinema coincides very and on a parallel, very close to the golden age of Hollywood. There would be actresses that would swap out, between industries all the time. Of course, it would have to be very whitewashed actresses. Like, yeah. Rita Hayworth, technically, is Mexican. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, a lot of these women would have a lot of plastic surgery done to them. But having U.S.-Mexico productions, particularly in the underground B-movie industry, which is the industry in which Alucarda was made, was very common, especially in the 70s when the fall of the code was official, which made independent movie theaters and grindhouses extremely common in the United States and extremely common in Mexico. You had a lot of, you know, co-productions at that time and a lot of mirroring of genre commentary with each other. But the interesting thing about something like Alucarda, which kind of positions itself between like a 70s giallo European film and something like a slasher in mm-hmm. some ways, or like, you know, some 80s Hollywood film, you get like this, you know, in slashers, sex is very much punished, right? But in things like giallos, like the Italian films, we've talked about giallos before in the class. Yeah.
I thought it was Italian.
No, yeah, exactly. In giallos, if you remember, there's like this celebration of sex with violence. And so you do get like, you know, there's definitely a familiarity to this, especially because it's in the English language and especially because it follows a lot of the sensationalism. I mean, you know, the exploitation cinema genre of in the era of Hollywood or, you know, of the United States was very much thriving, you know, at this time, and very much a dominant cinema. But you also had the mexploitation industry that was very much tied to and mirrored to with the U.S. industry.
Is this considered a mexploitation movie?
Yes, it yeah. is. Yeah, it's considered mexploitation. Yeah, so you definitely do get a lot of this U.S. Western familiarity, but I do think the European giallo tonal elements to it, and also, as you said, the Catholicism that is especially really
it's like ramped up here.
I do think that those are definitely the more Mexican parts of the culture influencing things, but you also still have this very strong U.S. influence in there as well, which I think makes it such like an interesting film to watch. You know, it's almost like it belongs in its own world. That's like not quite Mexico, not quite US, not quite. And, you know, again, this is a very extreme form of Catholicism being explored in
yeah,
the film
yeah.
and sexuality.
It feels like it's
and,
in a fantasy place.
Yeah, no, it definitely. Yeah. In many ways, it's very dreamy.
Yeah.
And the camera work is also very omniscient to godlike perspectives. Like we get a lot of godlike views, especially during the, you know, sexual sequences and the ritual sequences, which kind of implies this like God is a voyeur.
Right,
we are the voyeur,
right.
You know, judgment to it. It's actually extraordinarily, you know, like Clinton said, at its face value, you can enjoy it a lot and laugh a lot, but if you actually look at it a little bit deeper, you can actually also see the layers and care that was applied to it as well.
Yeah.
Alucarda, a really good time. So we're playing that one on October 19th.
Yes.
Yes.
Take an omniscient, am I saying that right?
Omniscient. There
omniscient
yeah.
view from the Sun Cinema.
Yeah.
One of the
yeah, and Clinton's favorite of these films, supposedly.
What, I'm in favor?
You said that it was your favorite?
Oh, this and Bloodettes.
Okay.
They go hand in hand.
Okay. I like to hear it. So on that note, I guess let's go
to the Bloodettes.
To Cameroon. Les Sognantes. Oh, God. I'm probably
you did
saying
it.
Wrong.
You probably did it. I took some. Yeah. Yeah, you did it.
Okay.
Fraîches, nous étions féroces, nous étions saignantes, nous étions promises à un festin.
So that was a bit of The Bloodettes, directed by Jean-Pierre Boccolo from 2005 from Cameroon. So what is The Bloodettes about?
The Bloodettes is about, you can tell my brain has just been like taxed by stress in life or something, because I cannot order events and speak them, but I will try again.
Okay.
Okay. Two women, let's say one woman of the night.
Two sex workers.
The movie opens up with a sexual, like, sex dance.
Yes.
Like a woman performing for a man, and she's kind of hooked into a harness. So she's doing like dance moves, and there's this to a rhythm, and the guy, but there's not like penetration, you know, but you're just kind of implied. So yes. You kind of already at the beginning, you're like, ooh, is this like an art house film? Are they having sex? Is this like, it's supposed to take place in the future, I believe.
Yes, it's like 2025.
So it's like, is this a Afro-futuristic vision of the future sex worker thing?
It's definitely an
here?
Afro-futurist film.
Yes, which is very cool.
Yeah.
And so that's how it ends. Or that's how it ends. Good night. So that's how it begins. And then I think, does that same man die immediately?
Yeah, that dude dies. He has like a goddamn heart attack or some shit. And we're like, what the fuck? Well, she knows she's fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, if he was just some random, what do you call him, Johns? A random John sex buyer guy. But
Majoli and Shushu, they are sex workers for the politicians.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
A twist.
The political elites
of Cameroon.
So we've
got a politician here dead. Oh, no. And that's a problem.
That is a big problem for a few reasons. And honestly, the really, to me, what makes this film so exciting is that it is very confusing.
You think so? I, for some reason, wasn't as confused. Not like I'm not bragging or anything.
I do think there are a few ways that you can interpret what happens next.
Uh-huh.
It's either they want to make sure that they're not with the body,
mm-hmm.
Because obviously this is a very important man.
Like, yeah.
Or another way that this film could be interpreted, because it is quite open-ended and experimental in many ways, is that they want to make sure that they give the man a good ritual for his body, or else bad luck will follow them. Because this sex dance that Clinton is talking about, we learned is as the mivanjo, which is a real ritual in Cameroonian culture, specifically to the Beti people. And Jean-Pierre Bacolo learned about the mivanjo ritual, which is a sex ritual.
It is.
It's a real sex ritual. No joke.
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean so, you have it?
So the female Beti women, they would perform the mivanjo ritual and they would believe that it would connect them to a magical realm that would give them a spiritual edge over men in
Ooh.
Order to control them. And so in the Bladettes, I mean, that's essentially, you know, Jean-Pierre Bacolo basically just makes it literal.
Yeah.
You know, there is like this literal magical realm ruled by this council of women. I always loved when they pop
cool.
up.
And
so throughout this film, you know, it's like we hear half the dialogue, but you also get it half narrated, and we can and we learn that the mivanjo is something that is extremely spiritual and important to Majoli and Shushu. And so yeah, that's why I say I think the film is never explicit. You kind of sense two different stakes being here. The fact that they have this dead man that's a very important political official. They are not fond of the political officials, by the way. Like, they spend half the time cursing them, challenging them, and whatnot. But also, you know, it's this idea of giving the man his proper ritual to be right with, you know, within their culture, within the mivanjo, because mm-hmm. the mivanjo is sacred to them. A lot of really interesting complexity to this film.
And where's the queerness, right? It's in the relationship of the two.
Yeah, they
women.
Have like this really beautiful,
loving,
intimate. They are never, I would say, directly sexual, but there are moments of deep, I would say, homosociality.
Okay.
Like, after they take care of a few things to do with the body, they kind of recuperate at home together in the same bed, holding each other.
Yeah. Oftentimes, like, pretty nakedly.
Yeah, no, yeah. Oh, definitely naked. But one thing about this film is that, like, just it seems like they find their power in their nudity, in mm-hmm. the very control of their bodies, and how they control it to heal themselves, to control themselves, but also to stun, you know, people, stun men. I love it.
Yeah.
Like, I always get so excited when there's a dance scene. It's like, it's so weird and fun.
And then, but then the fact that they can come back together, it's like they're human, and they, you know, their bodies are their bodies and they're part of who they are, and they're not stunning each other, you know.
No.
Like, if a man, if a
together.
Hollywood director was like, okay, these lesbian ladies, and then they blah blah blah, but this is really just, there's an intimacy whether or not they are romantic or not, and that's really, really, really thrilling to see.
And this film does not play out at all like any Western film. You know, you get jump cuts, you get,
and
you know what was my favorite part? Inner titles. There were a few that I really, one of my favorite ones
that was really cool
is, how can you make a horror film in a place where death is a party? Poetry.
Yeah, right.
That
and
is
when you
so
see
good.
it hits you.
Yeah.
And it's just like, boom.
Very on. French New Wave in a way, you know, it would just be like you would be in the middle of an action scene and then the screen would like flicker and then fade to black. And then you would get this black on white text mm-hmm. and then you would just cut to the next. And, you know, so they're trying to solve the crisis of this body. And at sometimes it gets I think that this is also a very funny film, mm-hmm. you know, like I literally laughed out loud when the head was cut off.
Oh my gosh. That was yeah. So yeah. Good. It's sort of like a road trip movie.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah. In many ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And the girls having fun, you know.
Yeah.
Just girls having fun trying to get rid of a body. Like kind of a great.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it hasn't been done more.
No. Yeah. Yeah. In many ways, you know, they're definitely like, I think, budgetary restraints that make this film like I guess I could understand why it may not have taken off, but I also think first off, it's designed spectacularly. I think the yes. colors are so beautiful,
and even though you'll see cuts and edits that you're like, well, this would never fly, you know.
Yeah.
It worked. Like, it's fine. It works.
It's an African film
too. It still feels like you don't lose story. You don't feel like, oh, yeah. Now I can tell this is just made by someone who didn't have the time
money.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, this, it works. And there's like a
it's
quality
so original.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It, that makes you feel, I felt like such a snob 5 minutes into this movie, not even.
Right.
I literally had the thought that I've heard before and I think is so like hoity-toity, but I literally had the thought that all Hollywood movies are the same. Like
right.
every movie you see at the theater is more or less the same.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen. You know how it's going to happen. Or as you see it,
yeah.
you've seen it before. But this movie is what is an example of a movie that is not. You've never
you
seen
never know
this
what to expect.
Before. You don't yeah. know what to expect. And everything from the editing to the character, to the actors, everybody,
the musical
dialogue,
motifs too.
The musical motif is awesome.
I get that stuck in my
head.
Constantly.
I wish there was a couple different ones because, yeah, the one.
I think that's the melody.
It almost is like maybe like Pavlovian or something. Because
I think so
I've
too.
I've been doing that in my head since we started talking about it.
It's amazing,
yeah.
isn't it? No, yeah. But
I want to hear like the full song. Like you only get to hear like the 20 seconds.
Is it like
so.
Hook? Yeah.
yeah.
But low key. And then they're always like dancing. I swear, like
yeah.
as he says Pavlovian, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm ready. Move on, Joe.
It pumps you
me.
Up. Yeah. They're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, and I love these actresses were so great. Their energy, especially when they're like fighting back against men that are like catcalling them or doing whatever, they have so much ferocity
mm-hmm.
in such a graceful way too. Like it's like, it's just, it's honestly hot. Like
yeah.
they're just like, I love how, you know, this movie is definitely complex, but it also just like blooms in such a way that is so unique. And I think that if you find this film challenging to watch or to take in, I always just think, think to what just Clinton just said about how we're so conditioned to feeling a certain rhythm in films that is just completely bucked in this film. And that to me is what makes it so exciting.
Yeah. And I don't know that I've ever seen a movie from Cameroon.
Yeah.
So to see a movie from a director, from voices and actors and stories from a place you've never seen before, like
yeah.
there is such value in that. And this movie hasn't really been shown here, like
no.
theatrically, right?
No, it's on Canopy. But it's a hard film to watch overall, like hard in the sense of
finding
accessibly.
It, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So it hasn't really been given any screenings in the United States. And so it's going to be really exciting to be able to play this in DC,
mm-hmm.
you know. I strongly recommend, like, if you're not too sure which one to go to, I mean, all of them are going to be awesome, but I definitely think the Bloodettes, you know, is one that's a bit more rare to find. And
it's the most modern, I guess. It's
it
the,
is
you
technically
know,
the most,
most
modern.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2025 is around the corner.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned to me, too, that the director of this is Is he trying to finance another movie or trying to create another movie?
So, you know, this movie definitely, it got some recognition, especially in the festival circuit. And, you know, it was at least negotiated enough to be up on Canopy, which is definitely, you know, like, not an easy thing to do. It's not like everyone can end up on Canopy.
I remember seeing before we did it, I've definitely looked at this film before and been that looks cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't like it was a huge hit either. And
it's hard to be a hit when you don't even get screened, you know? How do you even pick up press and
how do you fight against, you know, American, European markets? It's definitely, this is an example of like, there are films, you know, being made in Africa and Southeast Asia, you know, and you know, places where, as Clinton said, you may have never realized you've seen a film from it. And I think it's important to open our minds to what these films are like and what they bring to, you know, something like Queer Fears, right? In and of itself, even though the homo sociality or whatever, the queerness isn't explicit, this is a queer story in and of itself within Cameroonian culture, because it is a story of women very much in control with their sexuality and using their sexuality as power for their own means. They're never pleasing any men in this film, and that is also quite non-normative. Again, it's a very queer film for that sense, and it's also like empowering by the end, you know, like they are together within their culture, within their magical powers given to them through the ritual of the Mivonjo. It's like exciting. It's almost like feel good, I feel. Our most feel good film.
Yeah It is a fun one.
Yeah, so this one's going to be screening on October 26th.
It out, y'all. Yes. We got three great movies.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is that, like, this is the first time you've ever done anything like this. And to have three movies that are, you know, this quality and that are interesting in their own ways, and three, they're different.
Yeah.
Everything like that. I am so proud of you, May, for doing this. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
How kind.
I am so excited for other people to get to see
these
movies.
Yeah, same. I'm excited to hear what people think. Like, genuinely, if you're out here and you listen to this, like, the whole reason why I did this is so that people could see some of these films, since I know none of you have seen The Lost Boys. But, you know, in all seriousness, yeah, some of these films, in many ways, I get like 30 students a semester to show them films that I think should be seen. And this is my way of just trying to make that even larger and just trying to remind all of us that there are a lot more movies that may not get exposure, and that it's really cool to build film cultures outside of the norm, because, you know, how many times can you go see Thor, Love and Thunder?
Yeah. There's more Thor. Always more Thor.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. But, Jurassic Park, it's like I twitch every time they make a new one.
I don't think they're making more.
They're never going to stop.
I hope.
They're never going to stop.
They can't. I do recommend Reservation Dogs.
Oh, the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only Taika Waititi property that is allowed on this podcast. All right, so please come out.
Come on out.
Clinton might be there.
I would be there every single time. I do have a couple travel obligations, but
Clinton's a dad, guys. This is why I'm single mother
I also am going on a couple trips, and so, but
Clinton's a jet setter.
I will be there for one, at least, and I am going to be there in spirit and heart for the others. I am so proud of you and so excited.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So have fun, everybody.
A very wholesome time today. Well,
we didn't hate anything, huh?
We didn't. I'm very proud of you. I'm very, because you're sometimes an unexpected. You're the wild card.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go turn some queer fears into some queer deers.
Queer deers. Oh, yes. Dear. No more fear.
No more fears. Okay. Don't worry, deers.
Be
good night.
Yes. Good night.